the official commercial version of the 1960s classic Captain Scarlet. Oh, Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons, to give it its full sort of title. Talk about excitement. Chloe Baker. Now, I know you're keen to obviously connect with the excitement of Sci-Fido in London, and a bit like Sue, really. I mean, we sense over the years you haven't really been a science fiction geek. You haven't got in touch with your inner geekdom, but step by step, you've been a pretty... I mean, you're excited by the Jurassic World trailer?
I've decided that saying you don't like sci-fi is not applicable because it's such a big category of different stuff.
Very good. Very, very perceptive. Nevertheless, when we mentioned The Big Bang Theory, you were very excited.
Yes.
Punching the air, quite literally, several times when we said yes. After a slight hiccup in the first time round, we attempted to get the august personage and indeed general all-round wonderful soul, Gay Linville, on the show. When we said it's confirmed, it's looking right, she's on tonight, you were very excited.
Yeah.
And so are we all. Gay Linville, welcome to the production. How are you?
Thank you very much. Quite well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, a three-page resume. Unbelievable. And some of the goodies. I mean,
it's been a long time.
You've worked with your David Cassidy's, your Heather Locklear's, you know, even, dare I say it, the very same Midweek Drivettes, Jean Bruce Scott, and indeed Randy Reinholtz. You kind of put them together. Yep. Oh, genius.
I was amazed at how many directors you've got listed down here. Who was your favourite one to work with?
Well, I have to say, my favorite one is the one I work with now, who is Mark Sandrowski. And Mark does The Big Bang Theory. And he's just the best. He's great.
Now, I tend to binge on my Big Bang Theory, I'll be quite honest. I binge in DVD box sets, and I've currently reached the end where, effectively, Sheldon has just decided to go off on a long train journey.
I love Sheldon.
Much like Phil Leonis probably has, etc. Obviously, no spoilers. Yep. But we did have a question from Jamie Anderson. The son of Gerry Anderson, of course, who's there. And can you remember what the question was, Katie?
Yeah, it's how do you cope with the criticism from scientists and self-proclaimed geeks?
Self-proclaimed geeks who think that actually Big Bang Theory sometimes is either a little bit too harsh or factually incorrect. I couldn't believe it! But anyway, if any questions...
As a matter of fact, we don't actually get a lot of criticism here. There's a watchdog agency that watches for accuracy of science in television, and so they watch all the procedural shows, the CSIs and that, and everybody who does science, and they rate them, and we have always been rated number one. Now, we don't deal with a lot of science, you know, overall, but the science that we do deal with is very accurate, and we have a consultant from UCLA. He's a physicist at UCLA, and he goes through every single little thread that we do. And in fact, if you look at the whiteboards in Sheldon's apartment, literally in Sheldon's apartment, all those formulas change. And he makes sure, he puts those up there and he makes sure they're right. And in fact, once he brought his class to show them the set, and unbeknownst to them, their final exam was on one of those whiteboards.
So that's attention to detail, isn't it?
That's good. And I was just captivated by his T-shirts. It's fantastic. You know, one week it's Green Arrow, next week it's Aquaman, then it's The Flash, then it's Hawkman. He's obviously a DC character person, which is sensational. Andrew David, who's the managing editor of the station we're currently broadcasting from, Siren 107.3 FM, once had a little set tour on one of his regular annual journeys to the United States of America. And I think he was taken round to the excitement that is the Big Bang set. And I believe, from what he was saying, that actually your writers, Gay, sit in a front row panel, and basically if a laugh doesn't work and if the audience don't respond, they'll actually go away and rewrite the scene. Is that the case, Gay Linville?
Yeah, that's true. Our Chuck Lorre, who is the master of this, as you can tell from my resume, I've done a lot of sitcoms, and I've never ever seen anybody as brilliant as he is at this. And he knows if something works or if it doesn't. And even if they have a joke that has worked all week and they love it and they think it's the funniest thing they've ever written, if the audience doesn't laugh, they stop. We stop and they rewrite it. And so that sometimes will take. We might sometimes stop down for 20 minutes while they get it right. And if it doesn't work again, they'll stop and they'll do a new one. So there are about 10 writers, and when this happens, they all stand around and they just pitch ideas, until a joke finally takes shape. And that happens throughout the week and even in front of the audience, yeah.
So many ways similar to the Midweek Drive in terms of our pre-production meetings, in which sometimes the shows go on for 25 hours. You know, we just have to, you know, we have a pause and start off all over again. Chloe, questions from yourself.
I was going to ask, after looking at the miscellaneous episodes, what Hannah Montana episode you did, because
Hannah Montana!
No, I saw that. How did you get from Hannah Montana to Big Bang Theory?
I was a big fan of Hannah Montana when I was about 13, so...
So, Gay, were you responsible for Miley Cyrus becoming the lovely, innocent little individual she's become today? Or is that a case of, she was probably okay when she was on Hannah Montana?
I'm afraid I can take no credit for who she is today.
And
I did a few episodes there, and it was towards the end, and she was definitely feeling her oats at that point and getting ready to get out of Hannah Montana. But she was great. She was a real pro, knew her lines and knew everybody else's lines, and she was a real professional, which I think, she's always been.
Yeah, exactly. And let's face it, if Hannah Montana ever decided to actually take off her clothes and get on a rocking ball and twerk the audience, what the hey? You know, it's postmodernism. The Disney company's broad enough. They can cope. It's just a thought there. Let's go. I mean, Big Bang Theory, as we say, we could talk for weeks about, and probably will actually on one sort of stage. But let's move on to the connection with Jean Bruce Scott, of course, from Native Voices at the Autry, and of course Randy Reinholtz, and your work with what is basically a classic soap series, Days of Our Lives, which tragically has never been released on DVD this side of the Atlantic Ocean. I know it's a
shocker. Well, Lives went on the air in 1965, so this year it's celebrating its 50th anniversary.
Wow.
And I mean, that would be one heavy DVD set, you know? I think they're up to some, a thousand, maybe 15,000 episodes, whatever 250 times 50 is. What's that? I don't know.
These are the days of our lives.
Too many.
a lot. And I was fortunate to be there in the 80s. Which was really the glory days of days. Jeannie was there, and Bo and Hope, and Patch and Kayla, and you don't get it in England, do you? Have you ever gotten it?
Yeah, I've seen it a few times, but only in sort of repeats and reruns, and sort of usually in the wee small hours of the morning. It's not something that's on and on a regular basis, I don't think. Certainly not now.
Wow. It's our loss, obviously.
Big in the 80s. One of our main heartthrobs was an English actor named Charles Shaughnessy, who was later the father on The Nanny, Mr. Sheffield. But he was at Days, played a spy. And so it was a great time, and Jeannie was just great. She was young and starting out, as before she went to Airwolf, and we all were young, and we, sort of had a little gang, and we'd go down and party, and we are all still friends today. So it was a great time.
Cool. So what have you got in the pipeline, sort of, future jobs?
Well, I'm hoping Big Bang stays on for a while. We have another 2 years for sure. We have a contract for 2 more years. And then the cast is starting to say that they might like to stay longer. And so if that's the case, hopefully we'll last a while. I don't know. We're hoping at least for another year after the two. And, three of them are making $1 million an episode now. And next season, not this season coming up, which we start in August, but next year in 2016, 5 of them will be making $1 million an episode. So for me, I think I'd like to stay another year. Why not?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Once you get over that seventh season, once you get over season 7, then it's all gravy after that, really, from that point of view. Just hang on in there. Get to 7 seasons and continue onwards. Look at Friends,
for
instance.
We're going into our 9th season in August, and, let's hope for 11. I don't know. We'll see.
It's fantastic.
I also, by the way, work on the show Mom, which is Chuck Lorre's newest show, and it's with Allison Janney and Anna Faris.
I love Allison Janney.
It's fantastic. It's a great show. Allison just won the Critics' Choice Award. She won the Emmy last year. She could win the Emmy again this year. It's just, it's about recovery and bumps in the road and hope for the future. It's a wonderful show. If you haven't seen it, you should try to catch it. And because it's in the UK. It's on ITV2, I think.
Oh.
Now, the other thing about the whole Chuck Lorre scenario is those wonderful blipverts he has at the end. Where
I
that
always
fire,
pause them and read them.
It's, yeah, we are, you see. Because every week it's a different sort of contemplative sort of work. Have you ever sort of contributed to that, Gay? Or is it a case of, no, just leave it to Chuck. He'll write something on for it.
No, those are purely Chuck. That's pure Chuck. And something very revealing about him. He's a private guy, and he's not an extrovert, and so I learn things reading those. I never miss one of those things. We call them vanity cards. He calls them vanity cards. And a couple of years ago, he did a coffee table book of his vanity cards. He sold it and gave all the money to charity. So you could have, I think he's up to 450 of them now from when he started writing them. But they're great. They're funny. A lot of times funny.
And Chloe, your favorite Big Bang character who you are particularly keen to actually promote is?
That's a hard question. I really like Amy Farrah Fowler. She's hilarious.
Yes, I think you.
Oh yes, Mayim. She's fantastic, isn't she?
Yeah, she's great. Wasn't she a scientist before she became an actress?
She was Blossom. She was an actress. Did you get the show Blossom in England?
Yes, we did.
What happened?
Years she was ago. Blossom, and then she went to UCLA and got a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD. So she is actually a neuroscientist. She's actually a doctor. Mm-hmm. And then she got married and had a couple kids and decided she wanted to try acting again. And they told her at her audition they wanted her to come in and be a female Jim Parsons. And she said, "Who's Jim Parsons?" Because she didn't ever watch the show. She'd never really seen it. So came in, she watched a couple of shows and saw who he was and came in and did what she did. Of course, she got the job right away. And she's been such a great addition. She's extremely smart, and lovely. She's great and very funny. She makes me laugh all the time.
There are literally so many areas. Andy, any thoughts or questions for yourself?
Yes, I was wondering what Ted Danson was like to work with.
Ted Danson?
Yeah, I see in your miscellaneous episodes you've worked on Becker. I was wondering, because Ted Danson, I've heard, is notoriously difficult to work with. I was wondering what your opinion was. I'm sure you'll be...
diplomatic.
Yes. But,
that's so funny. Actually, I did two shows with Ted. I did Becker a few, and I did a show called Ink, which was a short-lived show that he did with his wife, Mary Steenburgen. And I never saw a single difficult thing about him. I mean, I'm not just saying that. He was lovely and very professional and helped in the creative process. And I wish I had some dirt for you, but I don't. I just thought he was great.
Gay, we don't do dirt on this show. We leave that for other stations that are less morally sorted than Siren 107.3 FM. It's just not going to happen from that perspective.
And I was just winding up with a lot of dirt, so I'll save it for another time.
Oh, I can see it'll work through. So, I mean, how do you fit it all in? That's my next question. In terms of clearly working with The Big Bang Theory, working with Mom, I mean, you said over 750 episodes you've worked with respect to the whole thing. Is it a case of time management personified? Because, of course, the other thing we haven't spoken about, you were in Liverpool recently.
I was there a week before last. Well, we get 3 weeks off, three months off a year, and so that's what I was using my time in Liverpool. But when we are in production, which is from late July to mid-April, you know, it's pretty much full bore. We work 12-hour days, and... you know, you have to be really focused on it, and you really have to love it, and most of us do. There are a lot of shows I've worked on that I haven't loved, but this one, Big Bang, is just a joy, and Mom, too, to go to work, and, you know you're going to be laughing all day, and this crew, Mark Sandrowski, the director that does Big Bang that I was talking about, is a real kind of, he's a guy's guy, and he loves games and sports, and so we always are playing games and have competitions, and we do things on the stage at Big Bang, which makes it a really fun atmosphere. So not only is the cast really fun and the writing really good, but we have a lot of fun together. So it's a, you know, that helps with these long hours to at least have it be light.
You've got to learn.
I will say, Chuck is a you know, he's no slouch. We all are trying to do the best we can because he expects us to do the best we can, and he expects it of himself as well. He's, you know, we have to toe the line, but it makes the show better. But he's got a great sense of humor, and he likes to laugh too, so we have fun.
All part of the rich tapestry of life.
Can I just say, I have a favorite episode where Sheldon goes to Bozeman, Montana. Which is where I am.
Which, of course, is...
And he leaves after about 2 minutes. Because he's so cold.
Yes, that's right. That's very funny. Have you been to Bozeman, Montana?
Yeah, I lived there for about 5 months. So I enjoyed the episode.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, I saw the episode just before I went and was like, oh, God. But it remained my favourite episode because of that.
And when all said and done, it's true to life. So, you know, great stuff there. All right. You know, astoundingly, Gay, time is moving on, and it waits for no individual, nor indeed ace director, or indeed all-round associate director, or indeed, you know, wonderful person. So, Gay, have you had a reasonably interesting debut on the Midweek Drive today? Has it worked for you?
Very nice. You both have been lovely. Well, and I'll come back. I would love to come back anytime, if I'm invited.
I think it's guaranteed. A round of applause, please, for Gay Linville. She will return with more goodies, because we haven't even spoke about Heather Locklear, David Cassidy, some of the other sort of fine folk. This is a whole heap of scenarios. But I think it's fair to say we have to leave with this.
Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the Earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built them, started with the Big Bang.
And relax. Okay, you're listening to Siren 107.3 FM. It's the Midweek Drive. It's June the 10th, 2015, and in the studio, even though I think Gay only thought there were two of us, no, there are actually five of us. And, of course, six if you include your good self, dear listener, which is very important. We have, of course, Andy Kerr, Sue Royce, Chloe Baker, A.T. Dorr, and myself, Alex Lefchuk. Okay, coming up very shortly, Sue Manhennick, which is going to be quite interesting from that point of view. We're going to juggle through a whole range of other factors as well. Katie, share with us, where are you going on holiday?
I'm off to Italy.
Any particular part?
Somewhere west, somewhere east of Pisa. So that's
somewhere
about as much as I know.
East of Pisa. I see. So obviously it's a special sort of route.
It's a family holiday.
It's a family holiday. Somewhere along the line, they'll be taking through all sorts of fantastic things there, which is what we'd expect in many ways. When's your next holiday, Andy, by the way?
Oh, I don't know.
Exactly. Just continue.
A
shameless plug, please, for the Jolly Brewer.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, tonight is the open mic night. All the talent, all musical talent in Lincoln floats through there this evening. Get down there, musicians sign up from 8:30. The music starts at 9, runs until 11, bar serves to 12. We have a fantastic selection of all different drinks and drinks offers and some wonderful eclectic clientele. Please come and join us.
This is Rosie Langhorne, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk and the team on the Midweek Drive.
The thing about Rosie Langhorne is she's always got precision and quality all the way through, even when she recommends after, you know, a whole range of things, the legend that we're going to feature on the programme in a few moments from now, in fact. Oh, what the hey, we can't wait much longer, can we, Sue Royce?
Absolutely not.
Can we, Katie?
No, we can't.
Can we, Andy?
Are you kidding? I'm tingling all over.
Tingling all over. And indeed, can we, Chloe? No, we can't wait anymore. No, exactly. We've got Sue Manhennick online. How are you, Sue?
Very well. Good evening, everyone. How are you all?
Hello. Well, you know, it's almost like a flashback to the 80s, the 1880s, of course, when we first connected with that. We were all different souls then. It was a whole different world. But Sue was indeed the person who graciously allowed me to do the first ever interview for the University of London Record magazine back in the day.
Wasn't it?
A
long, long time ago.
But since then, of course, life continues to grow in its own magical routines. You've become a super mum. You've become awesome. What are you doing now, Sue?
Talking to you, actually.
Excellent. You see, that's the kind of witticism we've missed over the last three decades. Rosie's tried, but she never quite got that level. Go.
No, I've certainly done a few shows in my time on Top of the Pops one way or another. So I've been around for a bit, definitely.
Well, I mean, that's been around. Listen, you actually bestride the series like a veritable Aphrodite soul. Exactly. Lead dancer with Legs and Co. And, of course, Ruby Flipper and Zoo. And, Katie, you were only saying a matter of moments ago that through the magic of YouTube, you've encountered some Menhennick magic.
Oh my word. You're dancing to Jonathan Vangelis's I'll Find My Way Home, which is one of my favourite songs.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's lovely, Katie, because that actually was my very, very last appearance on Top of the Pops in 1981, I believe, and Slick very kindly gave me a solo after all the years of working with her. So I actually started out originally with Pans People, and she very kindly gave me a solo to do that, and I was the little pink... sort of genie out of a bottle for that one, but it's a lovely track, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
It's superb. And indeed, I think we might be able to magic it out of our own little genie in the bottle in a few seconds from now. But it is, there's time to progress and move on from that particular basis. You mentioned, of course, Blit Colby, the American choreographer of originally, of course, Pan's People, and then latterly sort of Zoo, and then Legs and Co. and so on. I would probably suggest that ultimately the BBC didn't quite know what diamonds they had with Hugh Giles from Legs and Co. You know,
I think really at the end of the day, it was one of those things. The show had changed so much over the decade of the 70s, and there were big changes musically. The show itself changed, and I think when Legs and Co. were actually created specifically for Top of the Pops, because it was made into a competition to find the name for us, which the lovely girl Elaine Coombs came up with. I think they sort of thought in many respects it was very different from Pan's People, who actually came to the show, whereas Legs and Co. were created for the show. So I think they decided that as things changed musically, the show needed to change. There was no doubt about that. You can't always keep the same format, and I suppose everything has its shelf life, but things needed to change. And by the end of the 80s, and the beginning of the 80s, sorry, they decided that they definitely wanted to have no dancers on the programme anymore. So then Zoo were brought in, which Flick was involved with, which was basically a big company of acrobats, jugglers, mime artists, some dancers, just a general, you know, hodgepodge of anyone that you could or wouldn't want to use that week. But they definitely decided to bin the dance routine that they used to have every week in.
Sue, back in 1984, I did a piece with Michael Hurl, who'd taken over the whole Top of the Pops production thing at that stage. I raised this point, and I pointed out that actually, you could have actually had the Legs and Co. team actually introducing the programme. That's what they could have done. They were articulate young women. They could have actually done it.
They are very articulate women, and it would have been lovely. I mean, at the end of the day, it would have been nice to have drawn the line in the sand by saying, changes are afoot, we're going to be doing different things, the show will look different, and it's time to say goodbye to the regular dance groups that you've seen on in the past, and maybe let us go out with a wonderful, cracking number that wasn't necessarily chart-orientated. Because you have to remember, we always had to work with what was going on in the top 30. So sometimes we would get the curved ball of the novelty numbers, like the Smurf routine and what have you.
Don't mention the Smurf, Sue, for goodness sake.
I was going to say, what has been your favourite routine over the years?
That one.
I mean, the Smurfs, we go back to that interview again. Lord above. I mean, there am I, a sort of, you know, first year doing chemistry and biology, and I'm taking it to the whole solar system, and the Smurfs come out unbelievable. Please, you know.
Well, someone was buying the record because it was in the chart.
Yes. Anyway, Father Abraham is not going to be putting in an appearance on this show. He already does the breakfast show Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Fridays. Oh, anyway, moving on. Different line entirely. It's a different response. Sue, if you'd be kind enough to stay with us, we're going to try and sort of synchronise this with the magic of the studio, and actually we'll pull up the delights of your good self with that I'll Find My Way Home, whilst we actually play the very same Jonathan Vangelis, because after all, Katie has sort of put in a request for it, and I'm sure, so we can actually talk about all sorts of things, including the superhero type line, ooh, there we are, squeaking there, of the way in which the cape is being developed. It's phenomenal.
Right, okay. Ooh.
You ask me where to begin. Am I so lost in my sin? You ask me where did I fall? I'm not alone. Somehow I'll find my way home. Somehow I'll find my way home. Somehow I'll find my way home. Somehow I'll find my way home.
do indeed feel that somehow our interviewees will always find their way home on Midweek Drive, even if it takes nearly 30 years. Never mind, Sue. It's all coming together in the end. So splendid stuff. So we have in the studio a wonderful individual called Ed Wellman, who is my MA Community Radio student a couple of years ago now, graduated. And Ed, it's fair to say that is your all-time favourite.
Hello, Sue. Yeah, that is my all-time favourite song. In fact, that brought me back out of our Siren FM office area into the studio immediately. Yes.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
You see the magic, Sue, that you sort of, together with John and Vangelis.
Yeah, it actually gets you everywhere, Alex.
I was trying to explain to the younger people around the radio station.
The less chronologically gifted ones.
I was trying to explain to them that sort of music was real music. The passion and the energy and the emotion in that. I mean, I don't think it's just me imagining it. It really was there.
No, I mean, there was some wonderful stuff, I have to say, during the 70s. And I think you saw big changes throughout that whole decade, from going from soul music all the way through to disco music, all the way through to punk, which, you know, was also very exciting. And then you have the new romantics. And, of course, you had the classics, the John Vangelis who never went away. And, of course, all the rock music that was always there as well. So you had a good sort of across the board, of music, which is wonderful. But that is one of my favourite tracks.
And that, Ed, is the reason, as I've said for the many a year, that, you know, the articulate nature of Sue Menhennig, you know, it needs a broader audience and a wider audience, and we start that campaign now. And Ed, of course, was given some choreographic lessons by Rosie Langhorne. Two or three years ago.
Yes, I remember listening to that. I'd love to have seen that, actually.
Well, Sue, I think the dream team of yourself and Rosie, only a matter of weeks away from signing contracts, hopefully. You know, the whole thing will work our way through that. Okay, let's move on. Katie, any other questions or thoughts for Sue at this stage, or shall we talk Ballet Ramba? I mean,
Ballet Ramba's good.
Ballet Ramba's good. Set up, of course, by a Polish individual back at the start of the 20th century. Sue, that was quite an interesting shift, because obviously taking it from the contemporary dance, I mean, you were classically trained, and those kind of areas will consistently sort of, you know, emerge. Did they help with, obviously, the work you did with Legs & Co, and indeed with the Ballet Ramba?
I think, dance is one of those things. There are so many sort of different types of styles of dance that you can do, and ballet is basically the basic of all dance, some people would argue, and I tend to agree with that. And then you get variations of modern, tap, contemporary dance, which Ballet Ramba features quite heavily in. And I was classically trained, and I did do a lot of contemporary work when I was a student as well. And in fact, when I was very young, just before my 16th birthday, we created a ballet company called Dancers Anonymous, which was purely a contemporary ballet company, sort of inspired a bit by Ballet Ramba. And we went up to the Edinburgh Festival for a month and put on a show up there, which was just eight dancers. And it went down very, very well. And I really enjoyed doing contemporary dance. It was one of those things that is sort of a cross between ballet and something a bit different. It's very hard to explain, but I really enjoyed doing it. So when I actually ended up working back with Ballet Ramba again, briefly, it was wonderful. It was like going back to my roots almost. So it was good.
Interesting enough, we did a feature with the Ballet Boys, who were set up a few weeks ago, and we'll probably be doing another London report on that one as well in the near future. Chloe, any thoughts from yourself? Any sort of comments or lines you'd like to sort of raise with Sue?
It's definitely not my era, but the dancing...
She says quite categorically.
The dancing is impressive. We watched the video along with the song.
The dancing was impressive.
And the cape was even more impressive.
Cape was phenomenal, you know, quite literally. The cape, I mean, it was superheroes before they actually became as rife as they were. I mean, you had Superman, various others. Genuinely wonderful. Katie, any thoughts from yourself?
How do you go about interpreting the Sex Pistols? Because
again,
I seem to
another dodgy question from the point of view of sex, from the Smurfs to the Sex Pistols, another button to be pressed.
Just how do you approach that from a classical background?
When you've had a classical background, you've basically been trained, as I say, in all forms of dance. I was very fortunate. I did ballet, tap, jazz, character, national dancing, everything else. And I think when it came to punk music, it was very much about making a statement musically. And certainly fashion, which was, I think, also inspired by punk, was about the complete antithesis of disco clothing, which was boob tubes and spray-on nice-looking clothing. Punk was the opposite. It wanted to make a statement. And I think when Flick got the Sex Pistols numbers, because he did a couple of them, one of which was "Oh, You Silly Thing." It was fun to do more than anything else. It was a case of, you know, doing something that wasn't necessarily politically correct. You didn't have to stand in fifth position. You didn't have to look pretty. You could just do what you wanted. It was about making a statement, really, more than anything else. And it was fun to do. I mean, there wasn't any big statement to sort of make about it when it came to choreography. It was just, I suppose, as Flick would say, having a laugh, really. And we did.
Yes, having a laugh with Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious, always fun. But still, never mind, that's another time and another era, and we progress ever onwards. Sue, you've been busily sort of working in the background there. You've been happily tweeting away, because, I mean, we did have the little chat with Jamie Anderson before you came on, Sue, and I did obviously stress that you're a big fan of Scott Tracy, so I think, you know, that's also another line we're looking to develop, you know, in terms of...
Also, I have to say, Alex, that I do have a very big soft spot for Parker. The chauffeur, and I think it's wonderful that he's still doing the voice for Parker.
So I shall bear that in mind on Saturday when I'll be having a few words with aforementioned David Graham, aka Parker, and say, you do realise that Sue Menhennic, the Sue Menhennic, is very, very keen. Anyway, Sue Rice.
On the cheek from me. That'll be interesting.
What was your favourite outfit? Oh, just looking at the YouTube video. It's fantastically iconic 80s. But what was you? Because, I mean, you must have done lots of routines throughout the time you were doing it.
And let's face it,
Sue, do you have a favourite outfit?
You probably at the time said, now listen, girls, we've got to actually get everything sorted out because people will be talking about these shows in 40 years' time.
Well, they really did. The costumes did go from the sublime to the ridiculous. Mm. You could go out, as I say, looking like a blue Smurf, which was always good for laughs.
I can see you're very fond of the Smurf, Sue. Obviously, well, it's close to the other.
This one's stuck in your mind a lot, yes.
People mention it and they tend to remember it, don't they? But then there were also other numbers where we had some wonderful long sequin dresses that were very Rita Hayworth in style and the sort of, you know, fake diamonds and what have you. And then there were some really nice sort of up-to-date Lycra outfits that I like, sort of short shift dresses that we used to wear. Then we used to have a good line in swimwear for some numbers, which was also nice. It was a great variety. A lot of the costumes were actually designed for the routine, which was also interesting if the number dropped, because sometimes the costume was clearly not right for that particular song. And often you would end up wearing something and people would think, well, that's a bit of a curved ball. Why are they wearing this, that and the other? Certainly one of my least favourite costumes, I think, was we did the theme tune to Lloyd George, Chi Mai. And Flicker decided, because it was all about the suffragette age and era, she dressed us up as suffragettes, so you literally couldn't see one inch of flesh anywhere. And that was covering up...
It was legs and coat do time travel. What's that to love? It's great. It's like Time's Arrow backwards.
We did frequently. And then we had other interesting costumes where recently, I think they showed it on BBC Four, it was a repeat of the MASH theme, Suicide is Painless.
Always good for most radio stations.
And we all looked literally as if we had come out of that soap series, what was it, Lost, you know, the plane crash thing. Yeah. And it was all these wonderful outfits. And then Flick said, fine, right, just slash them now, rip them to pieces. And, you know, he was like, but she's wearing a really nice dress, so don't worry about it, we're going to rip it. Yeah.
License fee payers' money, Sue. You've got to just run with it. It's okay. You know, we'd have a budget issue with respect to Siren, but as far as BBC are concerned, no worries. You know,
no. I mean, some of our costumes were, you know, worth a few bob occasionally, but most of the time we were quite cheap and we would reuse costumes and make them do again. They were rehashed. We were quite economical on the whole.
Astounding, you know, and you know, I still sort of I look back and I think, you know, they missed a trick, because Andy, I mean, you should surely, we need to work on the basis of Sue and Rosie get their own radio show. I think we should look at that.
Yes, I would like to see that.
The campaign starts now.
There would be a lot of laughing if Rosie and I did. I don't know how much sense you get out of
it. Rosie, I've kind of obviously followed through over the intervening years from Guys and Dolls, because we're kind of contemporaries from that basis. And had it not been for her good self, of course, say, you know, would you get, come back, you will not be here this evening. So, you know,
Rosie, I owe you one.
Someone said feeling.
Exactly. I'm just thinking of the notion of sort of the notion of legs and co do lost, you know, ahead of the time. Probably would have had a better ending, actually, from that point of view. So, life continues. A couple of final questions, Sue, at this particular stage. Musically speaking, we can offer you either Sergei Prokofiev with the Lieutenant Kiev Symphony. I thought, a little bit of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra would crop in from that sort of point of view. Or alternatively, we can go for Man in the Corner by The Jam. It's a tough call, but you know, I did have the Smurfs TV theme as well, if you desperately want to have a Smurf moment.
No, I can live without that. I will forgo that. It would be painful, but I can forgo that. Yeah. How about a bit of Prokofiev?
Bit of Prokofiev, very good. You know, so, I mean, people are used to the Montagues and Capulets and the kind of dramatic theme of that. We thought,
definitely, what a great piece that is.
Well, I mean, it is, and it's also what Sunderland FC actually run out to on a regular basis. But still, we won't go there, because they already had a tough season as it was. But Lieutenant Kiev, after which, of course, the town of Kiev was named, for any Russian listeners who are actually out there. I'll drop that in. Will be what will take us out. But the last two questions, Sue, are this, or these, in fact, plural. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic return, actually, first ever Midweek Drive debut? Have you enjoyed it, Sue?
Well, for my first debut, I think it's been very enjoyable. It's been nice chatting to you all. Katie, have a lovely holiday in Pisa, by the way. I've been there years ago, and it's a lovely place.
Thank you so
much. Enjoy
your
holiday.
Thank you.
She's been listening. Great. That's a genuine radio station. Astounding. Can we look forward to featuring you again, Sue Menick, in the very near future?
If I'm invited, if you ask me nicely, yes.
should Sue Menick return to the show?
Absolutely.
I think so.
Round of applause for Sue Menick.
Yay!
Don't get me started on text messages for emails and various other things that were sent through there, because that's a different line entirely, but still. Sergei Prokofiev, Q.
Thank you.